We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name's Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you fine folks on the other side of the speaker. Appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate you being here. This episode, as always, is brought to you by Prize Picks. If you're unaware what Prize Picks is, daily fantasy sports made easy. No pros, no sharks, just you and the numbers. 2 to 6 players, more or less on the stat projections. Watch the winnings roll in. You guys already know how I feel about Prize Picks. It's so simple, so easy to use, so quick. They've got all the sports you could possibly want. You're going to go to prizepicks.com/gold, and you're going to use the promo code GOLD to get a first deposit match of up to $100. Okay, that's prizepicks.com/gold for a first deposit match of up to $100. You just got to use that promo code GOLD. Prize Picks is daily fantasy sports made easy. Check them out. Got a little bit of a pleasant surprise, a good time for you guys today. Did a crossover episode with the boys from Candlestick Chronicles. That's Chris Biederman and Kyle Madsen, also of the Blue Wire Network. Friends of mine, we go way back. We all at one point have written for NinersWire.com. And I just absolutely love being able to get together with these guys at least a few times a year. I'm going to try and make it more often. To talk 49ers ball, and what better time than the week of the NFL draft. All three of us made our own first round picks for the 49ers based on Pro Football Focus's mock draft simulator. It's coming up right now. Check it out. I hope you enjoy. See you on the other side.
Oh, hello. Welcome in, everybody. We're live. We're doing a live show. I'm Kyle Madsen, NinersWire.com. Also huge Minnesota Timberwolves fan. Love our Wolves. Shout out to Lamb Chops. That's Chris Biederman. He is a sports reporter for the Sacramento Bee. And this is Rob Lauder of Striking Gold. And I believe this is going on both of our feeds. We'll probably have intros before this, so that intro was probably not necessary. But it's a live show, so I had to introduce us somehow. Thanks, everybody, for tapping in. Instead of doing a mock draft where we go through and make picks for all the teams, we decided to do a fake mock draft on PFF for each of us where we did the pick for the 49ers. And I'm really excited for this exercise. Hey, guys.
What's up, Kyle? How you doing, man?
Doing all right. I started monologuing.
How about that awkward,
you guys?
How about that awkward moment where I hit record and then you started asking a question that had nothing to do with what we were talking about?
Yeah, no, that's tight.
And it would have been weird if it came up live.
Yeah, no, you know, next time we're going live, would love to know that. But, you know, that's process stuff. We can work on that. speaking of process, this is our first kind of mock draft of the draft season, which I think Monday night before the draft, Monday the week of the draft is a good time to do it. So what we've each done is we've gone to PFF.com. and we've taken their mock draft simulator. And we simulated the first 30 picks, and then with the 49ers on the clock, decided to each make a different pick, and we will talk about who's available and kind of the thought process behind our selections. I have not made a selection because I'm a coward and I want to sit on the fence until I get confirmation from you guys on what I should be doing. Let's start with Chris. Do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay, great. You sure. Start.
So I looked at the way the first round went, and in my simulation, you had offensive linemen go, you had five offensive linemen go picks 14 through 19. So you had Latham at 14 to New Orleans, Fashanu to Indy at 15. Seattle took Fuaga. Graham Barton went 18 to Cincinnati. Troy Fautanu went to the Rams at 19, which was interesting, obviously, because I think the position that gets talked about most for the 49ers is tackle. Amarius Mims went 23rd to Minnesota. And Tyler Guyton went 27 to Arizona. So there wasn't really a tackle option that made sense there. And we can talk about, you know, is tackle as big of a need as it gets talked about? I think absolutely the 49ers could use a tackle. But I'm not sure that the back end of round one in this class, I know people talk about how deep it is. I think you could probably get a reasonable tackle in round two, maybe trade up to the middle of round two. But that being said, really at 31, my options came down to Jackson Powers Johnson and Chop Robinson. And I know what positional value is. I know the value of edge players to centers. And maybe I'm just way too biased when it comes to what I think of Jackson Powers Johnson and how good he could be in the league. The thing that stands out to me, I picked Jackson Powers Johnson. The thing that stands out to me watching the, you know, doing the deep dive, AKA, you know, watching some stuff on YouTube. You know how centers can shade, how they can like snap the ball and then it's a running play. It's an outside zone. Say it's to the right. And then a center can flip his hips and all of a sudden be blocking, like have his shoulders parallel to the sideline. And then completely seal off a defender, whether it's a defensive lineman or a linebacker.
Sure.
I thought Jackson Powers Johnson does that at a very elite level, on top of being just like an insanely large interior offensive lineman. And he's really, really strong. He allowed one pressure in all of 2023. I'll repeat that. He allowed one pressure in 2023.
That is
and obviously
impressive.
Zero sacks. And so his ability to shade in the run game, like why, like one of the things Kyle Shanahan said when they gave Weston Richburg that contract, I believe it was in 2018, was his ability to shade was like really a unique thing. And the reason why they gave him that contract and made him a priority free agent that they did. I see that from Jackson Powers Johnson. And I think of Alex Mack. I think of Jason Kelsey. And maybe I'm being way too hyperbolic. Maybe I'm way too high on this guy. But when you look at the 49ers long-term, I think getting a long-term center, Jake Brendel's, what, 31, 32 years old. He's in the last year of his contract. He's an okay player. He's basically a replacement-level center, maybe average, maybe a little bit above average.
Sure.
But I just think if you can get a center that you think is going to be somebody who can play at a Pro Bowl, all-pro level for the next 8 years, 8 to 10 years, that to me is worth a first-round pick. And I like Chop Robinson. But I'm not entirely sure he's somebody who can even play, you know, 15 snaps with the 49ers next year. And,
sure.
You know, so I just think there's, and given you have Brock Purdy, matching Brock Purdy up with a potentially really good center could be really beneficial. And I just really like the idea of adding Jackson Powers Johnson to an offense that's already loaded. If you give yourself an all pro type center along with what the 49ers have, I think you raise the ceiling of what you can be offensively.
To add a little bit of just backup to your pick, like I understand, I feel like I've become this really like get off my lawn type of draft guy this year more than every other
that
year.
Tracks. Because
I've
you're a dad now,
right? I guess maybe that was just something that happened inside. I didn't even realize it, but I mean, I would really like to know, and this would be a very long study, like how many tools only guys that have these traits that everybody talks about, how many times those guys work out, guys that don't have the production to kind of lean back on, because that's what everybody looks at first, but they have these, you know, long arms, big hands, Trent Baalke's favorite type of picks. How often do those guys work out? Because that's the way I hear people talk about Chop Robinson. Oh my gosh, his get off is so quick. It's crazy. You know, he's a just pure speed guy. And I'm like, well, that's cool, man. He had 4 sacks last year in college. And so it reminds me of that scene from Moneyball when Brad Pitt's talking to all his scouts. And he's like, oh, so he's not a good hitter now, but he'll be a good hitter when we put him up against big league arms. And you're like, so that's where I back up to, how many times is a guy that where people, the first thing people mention are his tools rather than his production. How often does that work out? Because to me, I'm almost like, just show me a guy who's already shown me he can play really good football. And at the college level, if he's productive, then the odds are pretty good he'll still be productive. But when you're constantly trying to imagine a world where these dudes that didn't produce in college can produce in the pros, it happens all the time. I'm not doubting that. But it's like, just out on those players, or at least more out on those players, especially for a 49ers team that could be one sweet draft pick away from actually winning the Super Bowl.
And I keep going back to, I mean, I have a couple of thoughts. The first one, I guess, is John Lynch said in his media availability on Monday, recording this Monday night, that they only have 22 first round grades on prospects this year. So more than likely, they're not going to get a first round type prospect at 31. So if your issue with Jackson Powers Johnson is, oh, well, this guy, that's 31's a little too rich for a center. I get that. But like, you're not going to get a first round guy at 31 if you have 22 first round grades on guys. So like, either take the guy or trade back. And I think trading back would be a very palatable option in this draft. And we can talk about that as we go on. The second thing I want to point out is what keeps happening to the 49ers in the biggest moments of games. They get dominated along the interior of their offensive line. It's happened in both Super Bowls against Chris Jones and the Chiefs. It happened against the Eagles in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. It happened against the Rams in the NFC Championship game 3 years ago. And obviously those issues probably had more to do with right guard than center. But if you improve your center position drastically, maybe that has an ancillary effect to it. It improves your right guard play. Maybe the communication between your right guard and your right tackle and your center is better, and Chris Jones isn't coming unblocked in one of the biggest plays in the game, like what happened at the end of the Super Bowl when the 49ers were in the red zone. Right. So I just think, you know, like, it's probably not the greatest process. Like, if someone wants to tell me it's not good process to look at like how you lost games in, you know, last year, the year before, and what specific thing happened, I get that. But I just think at some point you have to know that if you're going to try to win the Super Bowl, you're going to go against Chris Jones, or you're going to go against someone else elite. There are a lot of really elite three techniques. And I think having an elite center, and or you can play Jackson Powers Johnson at either guard spot, right? And if you want to play him at left guard and you don't want to pay Aaron Banks, then that works too. But I'm playing Jackson Powers Johnson at center. But I just think, like, you have an opportunity to potentially upgrade the spot that's been your weakest in the biggest moments. And again, if you want to tell me that my process is flawed, I'm fully on board. I just don't know how you can look at this 49ers roster and be like, oh, here's a spot where you can have a meaningful upgrade at 31 more than center right now. Because I think, to me, the interior of the Niners offensive line is a clear Achilles heel of the roster. And again, drafting for need is not always the way to go. But if you can get if you're as loaded as the 49ers are and you're lacking along the interior of your offensive line, and there's a guy there like JPJ, like, go get him.
Yeah, my biggest thing with Jackson Powers Johnson is that he was a consensus when mock drafts first started, and people who are professional draft people started putting on mock drafts. He was in the 20s comfortably. That's where he was going in these mock drafts. Daniel Jeremiah has him ranked 34th in his top 150, but he was sitting at 30th through basically the entire process. And now other players have started to rise as pro days have come. And you see guys like Kool-Aid McKinstry flying up boards, and Xavier Worthy and Ladd McConkey and all these guys flying up boards. and Jackson Powers Johnson falling, but it's not because of anything Jackson Powers Johnson has done wrong. It's just that these other guys are starting to work out and starting to put numbers that go with the film. And you got Xavier Worthy, who was comfortably around two guy, now all of a sudden running a 4.21 at the combine. So now all of a sudden, oh, look, he might be around one guy. That's the kind of stuff that is causing the Jackson Powers Johnson draft stock to slip, which is why if he falls to 31, like, yeah, I'm sprinting to the podium to take him for all the reasons.
I want to point out, like, Johnny Newton is somebody who I would love for the 49ers. He's gone at 20. Cooper DeJean, I think, would make a ton of sense for the Niners. He's gone at 21. Nate Wiggins, corner, gone at 24. Ladd McConkey, somebody who I really like at 31, is gone at 26. Mm-hmm. And McKinstry's gone at 28. So, you know, it's like if your argument is, like, really the choice here was Jackson Powers Johnson or Chop Robinson, you could talk me into Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri, the corner. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Darius Robinson guy. I understand the appeal. But for Mizzou. Me, like, just all this Cotton Bowl hangover stuff is just all too
right rough. After saying Ennis Rakestraw, you were in.
right. But I just think when you're looking at somebody who could provide an impact right away and start right away and potentially play every single snap on offense or defense, to mm-hmm. me, Jackson Powers Johnson is probably a guy who could be available in the 30s or 31 who could be that guy.
Well, one thing I've always kind of found interesting about at least Kyle Shanahan's 49ers is they've thrown pick after pick and player after player at the defensive line. Doing that, knowing that you're hoping to take advantage of other teams' weaker offensive lines, but they've been okay being among the teams with a weaker offensive line that elite defensive lines have kind of gotten the better of. So mm-hmm. you would think mm-hmm. you'd kind of want to invert that a little bit at some point. And we know Kyle Shanahan puts a lot on the center position, and two, covets it a lot. Like, I understand that right now he's rolling with Jake Brendel, but before that it was Alex Mack, like, for like 15 years, going all the way back to Cleveland. And then he tried mm-hmm. to pay Weston Richburg since, you know, with the 49ers, yeah. and that didn't work out because of injuries. But when they paid him, all intents and purposes, a super good center. So, I mean, when you really look at the offensive line going next year, 2 years out, pretty much every position is up for grabs. Like, none of them, to me, none of those positions are a wasted pick. Like, I understand, yep. sure, maybe you should go guard and center in the second round and later, but the center is such a big position in Kyle Shanahan's offense. And I just, without having the perfect way of quantifying it, because I don't know enough, letting Brock Purdy and a brand new center, like, develop together seems mm-hmm. like yep. smart business.
Yeah. I got to know. Speaking of Alex Mack, I got to know how much JPJ sweats.
Somebody tell me why it's a bad idea.
positional value is one of them. Two, I think you could say, well, they have Jake Brendel and you're not drafting. They don't value guard, obviously, enough to draft one in the first round. And I think you could look at Chop Robinson, who we'll talk about in a bit when it gets to my pick, and maybe Rob's. But if you look at their need at edge, and if Chop Robinson is sitting there, or did you say Darius Robinson got picked?
He did not. I'm just not a big Darius Robinson guy.
No, I know.
Not in round one.
No, I know that. But if the 49ers have, let's say the 49ers like him okay, and they like Jackson Powers Johnson, I could totally see them going with the defensive front. And Jackson Powers Johnson started 1 year at center in college. He had some injury stuff, which is definitely a problem as well. He started, 13 games in college. No, excuse me. 36 games in college. Check that. Played 36 games, started 17. Here we go. I can read.
That's a significant difference.
All right, 3-2-1. Played 36 games. He started 17 of them, 13 at center, one at right guard, one at left guard, and one at defensive tackle.
They needed as a freshman. Guy.
Yeah, they were a little banged up there. So,
Can Darius Robinson play center?
I don't know that he can't. He's more of a power forward or a big three to me, but you could probably put him at the five in some lineups.
With JPJ, you got some positional versatility. Maybe he plays three tech also.
The Shohei Ohtani of the NFL is Jackson Powers Johnson. You heard
market
it here.
Market inefficiency. The next market inefficiency. Find guys who can play both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I think that's the pushback on it, is just the lack of experience and some injury stuff and positional value. But if that's a pick, I'm definitely here for it.
If he was,
and you
just
know
like,
how much he sweats.
Yeah, no, you've said that. If
did
it
I,
were a situation,
did
where
I make
like,
that joke already? Whoops.
Yes. Sorry. They got. If it's a situation where it's like, oh, you know, I'm not advocating like I think they just need to take the best center in the draft. I am specifically in on this center.
Got it.
Like I have conviction about him being good. Like I think he could be Alex Mack, Jason Kelsey, like a long term dude.
You're staking your reputation on this.
Yeah, and if he's terrible, then I'll wear it. It's fine.
Well, and if you're in it, and if positional value is the thing, you know, like, okay, so most centers are drafted in the second, third round. Well, yeah, well, you just got the best center at the end of the first round. You know, there's some value to just knowing you got the best one of that position. You know, like 49ers got the best kicker in the third round. There's some excitement there, right?
Can I say something real quick on this? I'm calling myself out a little bit because I, in general, don't love the notion of like, I don't like that guy at 31, but in the second round, I love him. And sure. When I think the difference there is the difference between like 31 and 63. Roger Rosengarten, for example, from Washington, not a fan. Mm-hmm. Not a fan at 31, but at 63, where it's back into the second round. If he doesn't start right away, it's not a big deal. You already got a first round player in there. All good. But in my head, I keep coming back to the Niners getting to 31 and me being like, well, you could probably trade back to like 35 and get a pick in the process and then also get that guy. But at the end, just go get him at 31 then. Like moving back four spots
really
for
like
a fourth round pick is not worth the risk of possibly losing that guy. So at this point of the draft, I think you just, if that's the guy, then I think you just go get him.
I couldn't imagine what it would be like in an actual NFL draft room where you've kind of like narrowed it down to that guy and mm-hmm. you're like, we got a good trade offer. We think he'll still be there six spots later. And bam, he goes like one or two spots in front of you. And you're like, wow, this is just the worst.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
It's not a name on a computer for our mock draft simulator. It's a player that you could have had in your building for pennies. And he's gone. You know, like that's it's just different. It would be really frustrating.
No doubt. You want to go next, Rob?
I can go next. Okay. Available for me right now. Well, you know what? Okay. Before we get into that, a lot of the names you guys have already talked about. JPJ went 27th to the Cardinals. Darius Robinson went 26th to the Bucks.
Hate that. Hate that picture though.
At 26 and 33, I love that pick.
Right.
Jason Light, what are you doing?
26,
you doing?
Too rich for my blood.
Troy Faltanu from Washington went 25th to the Packers. Oh. Now, the reason I mentioned that is because if he is there at that point, I think that's a player that the 49ers would be on the phones for. And I don't really think the 49ers want to trade up in this draft. I say that, and John Lynch has already made comments about, like, well, how many of these guys could really start on a roster of these 10 picks? So maybe they are trying to get rid of some, steal some picks and move up. But I mean, he's one of, if not, you know, like he's one of the tackles I've seen go top 10. So if that really played out, I could see the 49ers trying to call Dallas in front of them, who they've done stuff with before. And they're like, hey, we'll give you that Trey Lance fourth round pick back. And you go up like five or six spots and get a tackle that you really think can.
God, that would be hilarious.
Are we certain he's going to be a tackle in the NFL?
I mean, I don't
he's
have
like
the wherewithal.
He's like 6'3", 315.
How long are his arms?
Well, I guess, I mean, yeah.
I'm sorry, 6'3 and a half, 317. Brugler has him listed as a guard. 34 and a half inch arms. So his arms are fine.
Okay.
He's a good tackle.
The guard tackle discussion is hilarious. Like, if a dude... I find it funny that there are so many offensive linemen. They're like, oh, this class is teeming with offensive linemen. So good. And half of them are like, yeah, probably guard in the league.
Probably, yeah. Graham Barton. Yeah, probably center.
Yeah, right. So, like, how can the draft be so good at tackle if we're not even sure half of these dudes are going to play tackle in the league?
Poor Graham Barton got, like, the two-position pushdown. Like, he played tackle, but he doesn't just get guard. He gets bumped all the way down to center. Like, he might be able to be a
center.
He's
a tweener.
Maybe he's just an overpriced backup. But, like, so... Every single name that we had talked about up until this point, even the ones that maybe we're not as high on, like Coy McKinstry or Xavier Worthy, they're all gone. But the one sitting there that is just so obvious is Johnny Newton. Jerzon Newton, however you say it, his real name. I don't want to disrespect him.
Love it. Love it.
And it's, as far as PFF ranking goes, he's the 11th player. I'm picking 31st. His average draft position is 25th. I'm picking 31st. There's no way. And my biggest thing here is, as I started breaking down the 49ers roster throughout the offseason, this is the first time the 49ers are expected to trot out a defensive line that, to me, is not going to intimidate anybody. You know, like Nick Bosa, he's always going to be a problem. But when he's the only problem, it's easier to deal with. You know, like the 49ers never really had a problem with Aaron Donald because he was the only person on that defensive line that really was somebody you needed to worry about. And you're looking at Leonard Floyd, good player. Not sure anybody's staying up late to game plan against Leonard Floyd. And then you've got some sort of mix between Malik Collins, Javon Hargrave. I don't know how they're going to put in Yeter Gross-Matos. It's just kind of this hodgepodge of guys they've traded for, and maybe the sum will be greater than its parts. But if the 49ers have like a top defensive lineman, and there's really only two defensive linemen in this first round that are ever talked about, like true interior type defensive linemen, Byron Murphy and Johnny Newton. So if that guy fell there, I know it would probably bug the hell out of people that it's just another defensive lineman in the first round, but I think that that's something that would go a long way, and somebody that could play almost immediately. You know, that's somebody that would play at least 50% of the snaps as a rookie.
I have a Johnny Newton take that I think Kyle's going to like. Johnny Newton is the Reggie White of DJ Jones's.
I feel like I just ran around in a circle.
I need to see him. Reggie White is like on the Mount Rushmore of defensive players. So I'm not ready to go Reggie
of
White.
DJ
yet.
Jones's. That's the thing. He's the Reggie White of DJ Jones's.
Sure. No. You'd need to be really goddamn good to be the Reggie White of DJ Jones, though, because DJ Jones is awesome.
Well, right. But so I'm in.
Isn't Javon Hargrave the Reggie White of? Sorry. Keep going. I think you're right. Maybe. I love this. Keep going.
I just think Johnny Newton's really, really good.
Sure.
I think the 49ers would do backflips if he was there at 31. And if we were going to make like a small group of players that the 49ers might be willing to trade up for based on fit and positional need, I think Johnny Newton would be one of them. And like he's Javon Hargrave, but probably better. He's super durable. He started every game the last 3 years for Illinois. He started 36 games the last 3 years. He's just like, he lives in the backfield. He's like, I think he's Chris Forrester or not Chris Forrester.
Chris Kocurek.
Thank you. The other side of the ball, Chris Kocurek's like dream sort of defensive tackle. And I think if you pair him with Javon Hargrave, I think that would be really, really interesting, even though they are super similar. He's not an Eric Armstead type. He's very much more of a Javon Hargrave type, but I'm all the way in. I think he's really good. I think he's like just an excellent football player who's better than his physical traits. And I think he would fit. My only critique here would be, and it's not even Rob's fault, it's just, I don't see any way he's there at 31.
Right.
I wouldn't.
But
I wouldn't.
If he's there, you sprint to the phone. Like
he's got
you take him over JPJ for sure.
Two things. One, he's got a foot thing, which might affect his draft stock a little bit. So maybe that's how he slips. It wouldn't shock me if he gets to like 28, if that's a player the Niners trade up for. given their need, their long-term need, I think, a defensive tackle. I think the biggest beige flag for me with Johnny Newton
beige flag
is the fact that he declined his invitation to the Senior Bowl, and I could not love that more for a player. I love that. He was going to go. No, because that's stupid. He's not going to go to... Huh?
You love it that he declined it.
Yeah, big time. He would have dominated the Senior Bowl.
Declining the Senior Bowl on this podcast.
Facts. I get, you know, the value for some players. For a Luke McCaffrey, the Senior Bowl could be invaluable. For Johnny Newton, he's going to go down to Mobile, Alabama, whoop everyone's ass for a day, and go, okay, I'm too good to be here, and leave. So he saved himself a trip. He already knows. I love that for him. I'm all in. And the numbers and stuff.
I kind of think the Rams might take him at 19.
That wouldn't shock me.
And just like, obviously he's not Aaron Donald, but like you have a pretty sizable hole in the middle of your line. Like he would be perfect for them too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty easy solution, but yeah, I don't,
what
do you guys, I was just going to ask before, like, what do you guys, am I too harsh on the 49ers defensive line? Are they going to be better than I'm giving them credit for?
No.
I see a lot of like guys that are a little on the smaller side that are pretty good at rushing the passer, but rushing the passer wasn't necessarily the defensive line's problem last year. They got ran on like crazy.
Their defensive line is not nearly good enough to be what they build their defense for it to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like they build their defense front to back, and the front is a little wobbly for me. Javon Hargrave was not great last year. Losing Eric Armstead is a really, really big deal. They still don't have an answer opposite Nick Bosa. Granted, I know you go get Leonard Floyd. Okay, that's nice. Like Leonard Floyd's a nice player for sure. But after that, like Yetur Gross-Matos has not done enough in the league for me to confidently say, oh yeah, he's just going to go be Charles Omenihu. He's just going to go do that now. And I certainly don't think that about Drake Jackson. I have no idea what Robert Beal is at this point. That being what you're rolling out opposite Nick Bosa is a pretty significant problem for me. And then when Kevin Givens is going to once again get real rotational snaps with Malik Collins, and Jordan Elliott's an okay player, but I don't know, man. That sounds like the defensive line of a team that has better cornerback play than the 49ers have gotten.
That offense better be real good.
Yeah.
I
shouldn't say cornerback, just secondary in general.
I think I like the 49ers defensive line as it's currently constructed a little bit more than you guys do.
Okay. Homer.
I definitely don't think it's the strength of the team like it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think there's a possibility you get just like a ridiculous Nick Bosa season this year. Coming off last year, which I know by his standards was a relative disappointment. But yeah, like that it's, you know, when the Niners went to the Super Bowl in 2019, like they were basically unblockable on a third and eight. Like, and D Ford had a lot to do with that too. D Ford was really good. But like DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead are both gone. You paid Javon Hargrave $80 million to, you know, approximate what DeForest Buckner gave you, and he didn't. And I think that was in part because he was injured for a significant portion of last year too. But yeah, like the ceiling of this defensive line doesn't feel nearly as high. But I also think comparing it to, you know, the era when you had Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner and prime D Ford before he really got hurt, like, I don't know that that's an entirely fair, a fair bar to compare it to, because you're just not going to find that many dudes. Like the 49ers were kind of in a position where, you know, they got DeForest Buckner. Armstead took a long time to really turn into a really, really solid player. And then Jimmy Garoppolo tears his ACL and you luck into Nick Bosa. The Niners haven't really been in a position to just like add like elite defensive linemen like they did from that stretch from 2014 to 2024, 2023. So it's obviously not as good. But I think they can, like, if they can be one of those teams that can go a long way with like a top eight defense. They don't need the defense to be the best in the league, because I think their offense is going to be just fine. So if the defense is top 10, and I think they can get there with the talent that they have, I think that'll be good enough. They just have to change the way they win. But I'm not, like, I don't think the defensive line is great, but I'm not I'm not really concerned. And like to your point, Kyle, like they're not going to be a team that leans on its defensive line as much as it has. Like they can't. They just don't have the talent anymore. So if they shift the way they play and what their emphasis and how they're going to win, how they plan on winning, then I think, I mean, they, I think that's what they have to do because they don't have the same level of talent.
No doubt. I think Johnny Newton would help that a lot though. I think the Johnny argument Newton would be just great. I think the argument against Johnny Newton would be one, he's definitely undersized. Two, the foot thing that has kept him from working out this offseason. I think that's or this draft season, pre-draft season is definitely a little bit of a problem. And value-wise, though, I think that's a fine spot to take a potential starting defensive tackle.
Absolutely.
And the need, is one where it may not be immediate. You may feel good about Malik Collins and Javon Hargrave, but what does that look like in 2 or 3 years? Right. And you may just have a Pro Bowler in Johnny Newton.
If he's there, you take him. I just like, I think the Rams take him at 19.
He's another guy. He's, there that long. He's another guy. He's all the way up. Brugler has him ranked, Daniel Jeremiah has him ranked 25th. And he was comfortably going early in mock drafts. And then his stock just kind of randomly declines as other stocks rise. So
reminds me of Derwin James, being a good spot. Derwin James, like the year before he was drafted, was seen as like a top three prospect. And I know he still went like top 15, right? It wasn't like that much of a fall, if I'm remembering correctly. But at one point, it was just seen as wild that he was even getting out of the tent, like past into the teens. And sure enough, when he was drafted, it was because his last senior season in college wasn't quite as good as his second to last season in college. I can't remember which years of school those were for him, but and then he gets in the pros and oh man, he was actually really good. You know, it's there's almost like a you can watch the recency bias happen in NFL draft rankings, and there's probably a case to be made that like the players that were initially ranked high should have stayed there. All right, so we're moving. Actually, before we finish the draft up, let me get in a quick word in support of our sponsors, none other than Prize Picks. Y'all already know the drill. Prize Picks is daily fantasy sports made way too easy. Okay, unless you're me, I make it look hard, but that's okay. You guys are smarter than me. You're not battling against thousands of players, pros, sharks. You're just picking more or less 2 to 6 player stat projections. Watch the winnings roll in, testing my skills on the Prize Picks has just added a whole new dimension to my football experience. You guys have heard me talk about it all year. What I like best, as always, is it's incredibly simple to do, incredibly simple to use. The website's very intuitive. You can forget to set your lineup and realize that they're about to kick the ball and have your lineup set before they do. It's really that simple. You're going to go to prizepicks.com/gold, and you're going to use the promo code GOLD for a first deposit matchup up to $100. Again, that's prizepicks.com/gold, promo code GOLD. PrizePicks, man, daily fantasy sports made easy. Get on it. They're rolling with Striking Gold for 2024.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. I heard a GM one time on the radio say that a team's board is at its best the day before the combine. And I thought that was really interesting.
Because it's all based on their college football play.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, they stop talking themselves out of players.
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
Wow.
God.
That's huge.
You haven't heard a lot.
No, I mean, I'm just, you know, like I made it pretty clear about how I feel about the combine, and people like watch a guy's 40 time be like, oh, he's definitely a first rounder now. I was like, is he good at football? Like, can we have that conversation? The combine, it just doesn't do it for me anymore.
That was the Xavier Worthy thing. He runs a 4.21, which is bananas. Like, athletic, right. Marvel, superhuman.
That's
totally.
The speed limit in his school zone.
That is just insane, bro. That is so fast, right? I get that. But all of a sudden, people are like, wow, he's going in the first now. Like, now he is? Teams already knew how fast this guy was. He didn't need to see him running a straight line with no pads on to understand that. But anyways.
You know what was really fast? Really, really fast? Like, incredibly
John
fast.
Ross.
And one of the most athletic people I've ever seen. Marquise Goodwin.
Oh, yeah. Olympian. I don't know if you knew that.
Are we just, you know, is he good at football? Like, okay, he's a decent receiver. He played in the league for a while and, like, had a nice 1,000-yard season with the Niners once. But is anyone drafting Marquise Goodwin in the first round because he's super fast?
No.
Anyway.
John Ross got drafted in the first round because he was super fast.
And I wouldn't be surprised at all if teams behind the scenes really aren't taking the 40 seriously because they've already got GPS numbers pads playing football.
Like, yes.
It all goes back to the football field. It's weird.
Preach. They have trackers in their uniforms. They can actually understand exactly how fast each player is while playing football.
Like from a miles per hour standpoint.
Like, we can do, there's all this technology that basically makes the combine like null and void, in my opinion. But
yeah, that's why a bunch of coaches don't go.
Yeah.
Anyway,
from the 49ers was like, you draft guys go. We're just going to stay here.
I'm going to start settling my draft boards right before the combine. This is the best this is ever going to be.
I want to go to the combine next year, and I'm going to interview team personnel. No, I do, because I want to interview team personnel. Stop. Let me do this. I want to interview team personnel. Candlestick Chronicles, foot in the bill, by the way. I'm going to be like, what do you get from this? Are you really like sitting here with your stopwatch and like, wow, I had this guy clocked at a 4.35. I thought he was going to be closer to a 4.38. Wow. What a player. Is that what's
the
happening?
Value,
no chance.
Really, the only value. Like, I've been to a couple combines, and like, they're fun. If you enjoy socializing and networking, it's fun.
Right.
For NFL teams, the value is the medical stuff.
Right.
To me, that's really it. Because
now
they can
players are declining to do the medical stuff.
Right, which is, I guess, problematic. But I mean, if you're going to draft a guy, you're going to do it. Like, he's going to be in your building and you're going to run your own medical stuff on him. So,
So players didn't decline medical stuff. I think it was Marvin Harrison Jr. I should say, I don't want Marvin Harrison coming after me, but Marvin Harrison Jr.
You definitely don't.
Like, I know, I don't even know who that is. Declined to do medicals because he was like, I'm not giving all 32 teams my medicals. I know there's three teams that are going to draft me, so I will go do this individually for them. Because that's what, when you get evaluated at the combine, your medicals go out to all the teams. Exactly. So he's like, that's dumb. Sense. I'm just, whoever wants me, I'll go to their building and do my medicals there. Which makes sense.
It does.
Damn. Crazy. All right, my turn.
Would have been your fun turn. If we ended this podcast without ever getting into Kyle's back. We're just like, this is great, guys. Good times.
Well, okay, so couple things on this before we get to who I'm going to take. I just put all the Pro Football Focus draft simulators, I put the settings all just in the middle, so you can do like public board versus PFF board, or less randomness or more randomness, or less positional value or more positional value. I just put everything smack dab in the middle and came away with an insane mock draft. I'm gonna run through some of these with you guys.
Great.
Second overall pick, Marvin Harrison Jr. Fourth overall pick,
Adam Peters, just changing the draft.
Byron Murphy, defensive tackle out of Texas, fifth overall to the Chargers. Cooper DeJean, sixth overall to the Giants.
What?
Joe Alt still goes with the Titans because that is just, dude, put it in pen.
some PFF dude behind his computer is like, as long as somebody doesn't line these sliders up perfectly down the middle, the draft board will work. And Kyle's like...
Quinyon Mitchell, ninth overall to the Bears. And then we have a run on all the tackles. This is where it starts to matter for the 49ers. J.C. Latham, 11th. Troy Faltanu, 12th. Talisi Fuaga, 13th. Olu Fashanu, 14th. Graham Barton goes 18th to the Bengals. Johnny Newton, 19th to the Rams. Malik Nabers, 21st overall to the Dolphins. Amarius Mims, 22 to the Eagles. J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings at 23. Mike Sainristil from Michigan.
Sainristil
goes 25th to the Packers. Go Blue. Jaden Daniels goes 27th overall to the Cardinals. And that gets us to the 49ers at 31. Just totally insane. Okay. So
who's on the board for you? Who you got available?
Kool-Aid McKinstry, who I want to talk about very briefly. Jordan Reed from ESPN had the 49ers drafting Kool-Aid in his final mock draft.
Is this your pick?
I'm not going to pick
Kool-Aid. Somebody you're talking about.
This is Jordan Reed of ESPN.
Okay.
One, I don't think the 49ers have never taken a cornerback earlier than the third round under John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. So, unless there is a massive sea change in the way they want to build their team, I don't think they're going to take a corner in the first round. Specifically, a corner in Kool-Aid McKinstry has a Jones fracture. That's just a lot of red flags for me. I'm out. Mm-hmm. I like Kool-Aid as a player. I don't like him as a first-round pick for the 49ers. Now, if they trade back to 33 or 34, love him. Don't like him at 31. So I'm skipping that. Jackson Powers Johnson is there. And if I was just doing this by myself, he'd probably be the pick for all the reasons we talked about with you, Chris. Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from North Carolina State. No. Tyler Newbin, the safety from Minnesota. Fine player, but no. Ladd McConkey, also there for the receiver from Georgia. Chop Robinson, also there, the edge rusher from Penn State. And then Jordan Morgan is the best tackle available. He is the left tackle from Arizona, who Dane Brugler from The Athletic has projected as a guard. But he can definitely, I think, just kind of in my limited knowledge of offensive line play, he looks fine at tackle to me. So,
man, this tackle class is loaded with guys who could potentially play guard.
Dude, it is the most versatile draft class in offensive tackle of all time. Just a bunch of bunch of dudes who can play multiple spots for you. So yeah, I think if I was, like I said, I don't want to ruin the bit and just do JPJ again. So here's, if it comes down to Jordan Morgan or Ladd McConkey, I would rather see them take Ladd and try and get a tackle in the second round, whether they trade up for one or whatever, because I think that when you get to this level of tackle where it is Jordan Morgan and Blake Fisher and Kieran Amagaji and Kingsley Suamataya. Yeah, there's just, I feel like all those guys are in the same tier where Roger Rosengarten, right? Yeah, Roger Garten. So,
I feel like that dude is so close to rookie of the year, Rosenbomber. Like,
oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So all those guys, I think, are, hey, maybe they start, maybe they're the swing tackle in year one. I think they're all just kind of the same. And I think you can get one of them at the end of round two. Or if there's one you really like, maybe trade up. There's a kid from TCU too, Brandon Coleman, who would fit that bill as well. So I think you just go get Ladd. Or the best player there to me here, I'm gonna go with Ladd. You go get him and then figure out the tackle stuff later on, because to me, Ladd McConkey is a pick who can help you right away. You talk about, Chris, you talk about like plays that won or lost the Super Bowl. Having a reliable receiver who is just open and knows how to get to the sticks and is a reliable pass catching target for a young quarterback. Yeah, that would have helped a lot. So I think you go get Ladd this year because he can help right away. And then whether they wind up losing Brandon Ayuk, I don't think they will, but it's on the table still. You have to start figuring out life after Deebo Samuel. And if you just have a cost-controlled wide receiver who you can rely on for, you know, 70 to 90 catches a year, whatever it is, I could just do that. And maybe he's never a top 10 receiver in the league, but everything I've watched from Ladd McConkey, I got the same feeling with Cooper Kupp. And this has nothing to do with their whiteness.
Just because they're
it's,
white.
When you watched Cooper Kupp, when you watched Cooper Kupp play football at Eastern Washington, it was like, oh, this guy is fast enough and he gets open and he catches the ball. And I think that gets lost sometimes at wide receiver because we get so caught up in catch radius and 40 time and broad jump and all these other height, weight, that we just kind of forget the basic tenets of the position. And to me, Ladd McConkey spends a ton of time open and he catches the goddamn ball. And that to me matters. And it helps that he goes and he plays fast and then clocks a 4.33, which kind of backs up what you see on tape. That's the dude for me there, man.
I think Ladd McConkey is a perfect receiver for Brock Purdy.
I agree.
Like an absolutely perfect receiver for Brock Purdy. I think, like, what are the strengths of Brock Purdy's game? It's accuracy, middle of the field, short, precise passing game. Like that is what Ladd McConkey gives to you, and he comes in as your third or fourth receiver, and he takes the onus off everyone else. Who you're like, man, Deebo Samuel's taking a lot of hits. He's getting to this point in his career where, you know, you really kind of got to work to keep him on the field because, you know, you're worried about the injuries and, you know, maybe with Ladd McConkey, because you can use the short passing game as an extension of the running game, you're not required to give Deebo Samuel like four runs where he gets like he bowling balls into four linebackers, you know, like you can take some of the onus off that big moments. Like you said, like it's always third down and six in a big game. And to have another guy who would excel on third down, like Ladd McConkey, I think would be an excellent addition to the 49ers. And to your point, Kyle, like, I think what's going to happen with the Niners, they're going to sign Brandon Ayuk to an extension. They're going to release or trade Deebo Samuel next offseason. And then you're operating with Ladd McConkey and Brandon Ayuk as your top two receivers. And I don't think that's a bad place to be at all, potentially down the road, if Ladd McConkey is as good as we think he's going to be. So I'm all in. If he's there at 31, I'm totally in. I think he fits Kyle Shanahan's offense. I think he's perfect for Brock Purdy. And both in the short and long term, I think it's one of those picks that would really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, as the draft process has gone on, kind of day by day, as I dove into the prospects more and more, the idea of taking a receiver became more and more likely to me, or it made more and more sense. I mean, with all of the uncertainty surrounding Brandon Ayuk right now, if you asked me which of the top three receivers was the most likely to be on the roster next season, I would tell you Brandon Ayuk, because he's the one with the best connection with Brock Purdy. He's just turned 26 years old. You're going to get an entire contract of his absolute prime, which we already know if he were in a different offense, he's like a 1,600 yard receiver. Easy.
Yeah.
And 10 plus touchdowns. There's, to me at this point, there's no denying how good Brandon Ayuk is. It's just how much better does he get, which I think is pretty encouraging. And to me, when you look at the draft board and how they line up for the 49ers, I would rather have the fifth best receiver than the ninth best offensive lineman. I kind of tied my tongue there. But, I mean, your ninth best offensive lineman probably isn't seeing the field in year one much anyways. And then
he might be a guard.
And he might not be a tackle to begin with. And whereas someone like Ladd McConkey, you could see him getting on the field now. He still might be a little limited. You've got Brandon Ayuk, you've got Deebo Samuel, you've got Juwan Jennings, but there's still a much clearer path to him getting on the field than a tackle who might be. It's like the Cassius Marsh thing. Well, you don't just go in there and beat out Colton McKivitz. You know,
tough to beat out Cassius Marsh. Yeah.
So it's
that's probably my favorite all-time Kyle Shanahan line.
from incredible shit.
With really tough to beat up on his face too. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Speaking of that, real quick, Rob, Aaron Lynch thoughts. He's back in the league.
Oh man, I feel like is he back in the league? We know.
Oh, yeah. He's with Jacksonville, isn't he?
He signed somewhere.
I don't know if it is Jacksonville. It makes sense because then it would be Balky's the one that gave him.
I could have swore it was Jacksonville because it's like.
I'm sorry. He is still a free agent. He worked out for the Browns.
Oh, okay.
Did he work out for the Jags?
Unconfirmed.
Okay.
Well, he's out.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, the thing is with Ladd McConkey too, and this is like a short-term thing. Kickoffs are going to be a big deal,
yep.
Right? Ray's McLeod is no longer with the Niners, so you do have a void at kick and punt returner, so you could get some help there.
Have you guys really broken down just how wild kickoffs are going to be now? Like, have you guys had that discussion on CanCron yet?
Oh, a little. I have a take though.
I mean,
so you know how the 49ers don't have their return man yet?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't think they're going to get one.
You could use a running back.
Right. I don't think they're going to have a dedicated kick returner. I think it's going to be like...
I'll throw CMC back there?
CMC or Debo or maybe in this setting they like Ronnie Bell as a kick returner. Or maybe they try and carve out a niche for Danny Gray in that. Or maybe it's Jordan Mason or somebody like that. But yeah, I think it's going to be like a
wild on the new kickoffs.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like a by committee type of thing where they have almost like designed plays that different players go back for. That's how I think it's going to go down.
That entire front line becomes this huge offensive line. Like there's going to be offensive linemen, probably athletic offensive linemen that are on kickoffs now, like because of the way that thing is set up. Like the first nine guys all have to be within like 5 yards of each other.
Yes.
And it's like, there's going to be like legit plays way more like that. You can clearly see with your eyes versus, you know, kick return plays are a little different. You know, usually you're just returning to a sideline, but this new kickoff, there's going to be like, you can see blocking schemes take effect and stuff. It'll be wild, but going back to Ladd McConkey, I think that I'm almost to the point where I think that the odds are better than any other position that they take a receiver, just based on where things are going. Debo Samuel next year, if you do a post June 1, you lose $6 million and you gain $18 million. So it's like Debo Samuel would have to return to absolute prime Debo Samuel for them not to take a super hard look at the fact that they can save $18 million next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, also, you know, what are the weak points of Debo Samuel's game, right? It's probably route running.
Yep.
Right. Like not a great separator. When Debo Samuel's kind of taken away in the running game, which doesn't happen very often, but it did happen in the Super Bowl, his value goes way down, in my opinion. Like he's not a guy who you can target 15 times in a game and give, like, you kind of got to jimmy rig some running plays for him to get him going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a knock on him. That's just kind of what his skill set is. And if you add Ladd McConkey, whether it's, you know, supplementing Debo Samuel or replacing Debo Samuel, he gives you a dynamic that, you know, like Brandon Ayuk, really good route runner, right? But he's kind of like, I mean, I guess Juwan Jennings is a pretty good route runner. George Kittle is a pretty good route runner. Mm-hmm. But you add another elite route runner to the 49ers offense, and just somebody else who can get open and be explosive and be good after the catch, I just think that could be immensely valuable, particularly in the biggest spots, right? Like, I think, you know, 3rd and 6 in the Super Bowl, like, to me, having Ladd McConkey out there would help a ton.
Yeah, and he's not a slot-only guy either. He plays inside or outside. So you'd have some versatility too. Yeah, man. I was out on the Ladd idea at first because I hadn't paid attention to him at all. But then I started watching him when he started getting mocked to the Niners, and I'm just kind of in a really good player.
If Juwan Jennings has a year this year that's anything resembling what he did last year, I mean, the dude was like a half a quarter away from getting considered for the Super Bowl MVP. Like,
yeah,
he's I guarantee you, he's being talked about around the league as a receiver that's about to come up into free agency. And I mm-hmm. don't think there's probably half a dozen teams out there that'll be willing to give him at least $10 million a year just based on the receiver market. And they'll be saying, like, look, he was the Niners' third best receiver at all times. In our offense, he'll be at least number two, and he'll get at least 800, 900 yards. And so I don't think the 49ers are going to be able to afford him. And just being able to fall back on a receiving tandem of Brandon Ayuk and say, like, a Ladd McConkey versus whoever the hell you got behind Juwan Jennings, which is, mm-hmm. as of right now, nobody proven. Trent Taylor, resurgence, I guess. You know, he could come on back, but
if he's going to make the team.
Right, yeah. It's there was a heavy dose of sarcasm there that wasn't laid on very effectively. Yeah. But
okay, great. No, I was just making sure.
I know it'll still surprise some people for whatever reason, despite the fact that Kyle Shanahan used to be a receiver and he obviously values the position just as much as anybody in the league. But if they take a receiver at 31, it wouldn't be surprising at all. And you can clearly see how it would work out in the future and how it would help them. So I don't think it should surprise anybody.
Well, even if they keep Deebo Samuel, like if they're keeping Deebo Samuel, Juwan Jennings is gone. And there's a pretty reasonable chance that both Deebo and Juwan are gone.
Yeah.
After this upcoming season. So in 2025, if you have Ladd McConkey and he's a year into the league, you feel a lot better about that than losing Deebo, losing Juwan, and then mm-hmm. having to draft somebody.
Yeah.
And be like, replace this guy with a rookie. Like that might be a little bit more difficult rather than having somebody who's, you know, been in the league for a year like Ladd would be.
I could also see Kyle Shanahan really liking Ladd and just on draft day saying, this is the dude. Like this Easily. Is get Easily. Darius Robinson out of my face, get Chop Robinson out of my face. Anybody named Robinson can hit the bricks. I want Ladd.
An embarrassing admission. It wasn't until maybe 2 weeks ago that I realized that Darius and Chop Robinson were two different people. I thought it was Darius Chop Robinson. Like the dude had a nickname. Mm. They were interchanged. And then I was like, wait, there's two schools listed here. Oh, got it. All right. Anyway, so I like both these guys.
But real quick, we didn't get to talk about Chop Robinson that much. I'm also very in on Chop. I like him so much. I think when I first watched him, he definitely got like Dee Ford vibes for sure. Yes. But when I first watched him, I was like, oh, this guy's got a really quick first step and then nothing. It was just beating everybody to the corner. But there's enough in there in terms of counters and little spins or getting back across a tackle's face if he meets him at the top that I got more encouraged for sure.
Yeah, I'm not out on the idea of Chop if he's there. I certainly understand the positional value and the need to upgrade at edge. Mm-hmm. My concern would be, and I don't, again, like if you want to criticize this process, I totally get it. My concern would be you're drafting somebody who's probably going to play 10, 15 snaps a game at most, and they're probably only going to be in passing situations. How much does that help this team that's like really trying to win a Super Bowl right now? If he comes in and plays really well as mm-hmm. a rookie, then it looks brilliant. If he's a guy that's kind of like 2-3 years down the line, okay, now he's a starting defensive end. Sure, that's helpful. But I just like that's my only concern is like, is this going to be somebody who comes in and plays like, is he going to be a difference maker and set you over the top?
Mm-hmm.
And I like Chop, but it's, you know, is he going to be Dee Ford or is he going to be like Diet Kirkland brand Dee Ford for the first couple years and then mm-hmm. he becomes good in, you know, 2028.
I hope that wasn't Diet Kirkland brand slander.
No, yeah, I just came from Costco, actually.
I love Kirkland brand.
I made a lot of quality purchases at Costco.
That green tea, so. like water. Well, see that with Chop Robinson, like, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, like, If somebody who was in the building was able to explain to me why he only had 11 and a half sacks in 3 years of college, you know, like, but I'm supposed to take him in the first round. If somebody could sell me on him, it's fine. Obviously, it's all about position. Like, it's one of the premier positions. That's fine. But it's like, man, how does a dude with those traits not apply them to success in college? And there are way smarter dudes out there than me that can say, well, look on this play. You know, he never had a chance to have anywhere near a sack, but he clearly beat his dude. You know, it's just situational mm-hmm. stuff that I haven't really dove into.
Yeah.
I have one more point I want to make. And it goes back to Kyle saying the Niners always the Niners have built their defense front to back. Do you think there's any chance? And like, I had this thought when we were talking about Kool-Aid. There's any chance they just say, well, our defensive line isn't going to be as good, and there's nobody available who can really make it as good. Maybe we start building it back to front. And maybe the Niners go corner in the first round. Maybe they take Ennis.
If you were going to do that, then you should have kept Steve Wilks. Like, wasn't one of the whole impetus behind getting rid of him that they wanted to remarry the front seven in a better way?
That's a fair point. But like, could that shift happen? Like, is it possible that they're just like, yeah, like we look at, you know, picking 31 and Newton's not going to be there, and we don't love Darius Robinson and we don't love Chop Robinson, and maybe we just like got to take an elite corner, and we're going to be a little bit more back to front now in terms of the way we build this thing rather than front to back.
Go ahead.
My point's short. Like, Charvarius Ward, last year of his deal, wouldn't surprise me if they extended him, though. D'Amador Lenore, last year of his deal, probably one of those two is going to have to go just based on where the 49ers are, if not both. Mm-hmm. Then you're counting on some guys that you signed in free agency to make you a little bit better. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they went corner, at least for you can clearly see how that person would end up helping the team.
It also, I think if they did that, again, it'd be a pretty stark departure from what we've seen them do in the past. But if they view the offensive tackle class the way we've kind of been talking about, where whoever's there at the end of the first round is about in the same tier as whoever's going to be there at 63. So,
or a guard.
Or a guard. If there's no tackles available that would be a little bit of a lesson learned from the DeForest Buckner thing. If they're looking at their board and Kool-Aid McKinstry or Ennis Rakestraw or Nate Wiggins or whoever it is sitting at the top of their board, but then it's Darius Robinson behind him and Chop Robinson behind him, and they're like, look, we're just going to take, instead of trying to replace this player that we lost with a player who we maybe don't love, I'm not saying they didn't love Javon Kinlaw, but that hasn't worked out the way they hoped. But I'll let you do that. But if they don't just go, hey, we're just taking the best player here. We need the last two drafts have not borne a ton of fruit, so this is just the best guy. We're gonna take him. We're gonna get him in the building, and we're gonna figure it out.
It'd be wild to take a guy 14th overall that you don't love.
Let me put it this way. They loved the potential of Javon Kinlaw. They knew that there were questions.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. They weren't like, they didn't run to the phone and be like, this is a slam dunk. We love this guy. They knew they were taking a bet that came with a lot of risks.
Yeah.
That's my interpretation anyway.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's one of the things that if you think they're going to take a cornerback, I think that's part of the logic that would get them there, is going, hey, we don't want to just replace this guy to replace him. We're going to go with the best player available, and that's this corner.
Yeah, and like, I think it would make a ton of sense. Like, again, to Rob's point, like, you have Charvarius Ward entering a contract year. Are you going to pay D'Amador Lenore? Your third corner spot has been a problem for kind of a while now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be crazy at all. I view corner kind of like in a similar spot to receiver. Like, if you draft Ladd McConkey, like, he's not going to be one of your top two guys, but in next year, maybe he is. And he could still be immensely valuable, even if he's your third or fourth guy this year. So yeah, I view corner in kind of that same vein potentially.
Sure.
I mean, he's no Jaxson Powers-Johnson, but
who is, you know? I'm also, Rob, you wanted to talk about AD Mitchell a little bit. I'm personally kind of out. Out for the 49ers. He might be a fine player, but the amount of cutups out on him, of him half-assing routes when the ball's not coming to him, I just don't think that's something that Kyle Shanahan's going to like a lot.
That was the biggest thing. Matt Barrows came on the pod. Thanks again, Chris
Sick
Bielan.
For
yeah, well, anyways. And that was he announced his draft crush that morning, and A.D. Mitchell was his draft crush. So I ended up kind of at least looking into him for the sake of being able to ask Matt Barrows about him. And the dude has some serious pluses. Like, he gets open, like a lot open. And so open that you're like, okay, they must have been playing like some zone coverage, and the guy was just didn't catch up to him. When in reality, it was man coverage, and he just created 6.5 yards of separation. He has that like kind of like floats in the air a little bit longer than most people when he jumps type of thing. But I also saw it was a two-play series where in the second play, once in the first play, he bitched about not getting the ball. And they were on like the 5-yard line, and he didn't really do a lot. He kind of just took two steps and turned around and yelled at the sideline over the fact that he didn't get the ball. Now, you can look at that as like, great, this is another A.J. Brown type of guy that's going to just seriously melt down when he's not the focus. Or you're going to look at him like a Deebo Samuel guy that looks at his coach and says, hey, gets me the ball, and then scores a touchdown on the next play against the Cowboys in the playoffs. Well, he scored on the next play. He turned around, yelled at the coach, and said, hey, I would like the ball in a much more colorful way. And then he just mosses the hell out of the dude. I haven't watched it, but apparently he ate Kool-Aid McKinstry up, like, completely, you know. And so he gets open. He's super fast. He's a good size. But the biggest thing that I kept hearing was is kind of how he behaves when either a play is not going his way or, you know, what type of attitude does he bring. And I think the 49ers have proven that if there's one thing that they just really won't compromise on anymore, it's just the type of person they are and what they bring to the locker room and the dynamic they're going to add to the receiver room. The stuff I saw was really impressive, though, like the route running. He doesn't have a whole lot of yards after the catch. But, I mean, did Brandon Ayuk come out of college? I'm not sure.
Yes, so, yes. He literally led the country.
He had like 13 yards after the catch per catch.
And yeah, I think like A.D. Mitchell is like under 5 or something.
Part of that. He's part like of
3.6 or something.
Right.
3.6.
Yeah. I wonder how, like, much of that was opportunity, but sure. Yeah, it's not encouraging for sure.
I
get terrible vibes from him, man.
I think Kyle Shanahan views deep threat receivers as decoys, right? Like, I think it's, you know, if he's going to invest heavily in a deep threat receiver, it's going to be like a third round pick. I'm not saying Danny Gray was like a good decision, but I just have a hard time seeing Kyle Shanahan use the 31st overall pick on a deep receiver who's kind of limited in everything else he does. And I think like the George Pickens comp makes a lot of sense to me because Pickens does some like high level things and he can, but I think that's that. I just don't see A.D. Mitchell's being a fit in the same way that I don't think Pickens would be a fit. And that's not to say that Pickens is a bad player, but Pickens is kind of limited to like, all right, run down the field and throw the ball up and then moss somebody. And that's just not what Kyle Shanahan wants his receivers to do. He wants his guys to be precise route runners, to have really good habits, to be able to get open at all levels of the field and be able to make guys miss after the catch. And the thing with Brandon Ayuk is he was like the routes he ran the most were like slants and screens in college. And yeah, he was really, really good after the catch. And, you know, we've said it a bunch on this podcast, like when Kyle Shanahan looks at receivers and how they, you know, how they move and how they separate, a lot of that is him evaluating how guys play with the ball in their hands. Like Kyle Shanahan, like he likes, if you're really good with the ball in your hands, Kyle Shanahan thinks he can make you a good route runner if you just have those natural instincts, right? It's kind of similar. So like for somebody like A.D. Mitchell and the fact that he's really good at running deep, like I totally get that. The fact that his yak numbers are what they are, the fact he's not really anybody who's run short yardage routes or short routes with any regularity makes me think he's tough to project with the 49ers. And I think there's risk in that on top of like the potential character stuff. You know, what happens when he gets 2 targets in a game his rookie year when the 49ers have Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey? You know, like I just worry that that's not really a fit.
I'm not entirely sure that he's just a deep guy, but I did not watch enough of A.D. Mitchell to like pound the table for him or anything like that. But I mean, I saw some pretty impressive routes and he had
sounds
some pretty
like you
good
love
hands.
A.D. Mitchell.
And well, you guys asked me to talk about him, so I'm just trying to.
Here's the thing: I think AD Mitchell might suck if the Niners draft him, but I can see him having 1,400 yard seasons and 10 touchdowns if he goes to the Chiefs.
Oh, facts. That's a great call.
I mentioned that with KP. I was like, how much do you think the fact the Chiefs are like super favored to draft a wide receiver, does that push Kyle Shanahan just a little bit closer to drafting a receiver just despite the Chiefs a little bit? He's already going to want a receiver, but do you think he'll just take a little bit of solace in knowing he might have taken one from him?
No.
No, none at all. It was a fun thought. I thought he might just.
I think AD Mitchell would be amazing on the Chiefs. I think Ladd McConkey would be incredible on the Chiefs also.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fair. I love the idea of Kyle Shanahan, though. Rob, you're onto something here. The idea of Kyle Shanahan being like, hate this guy, but the Chiefs love him, so I'm going to draft him and hold him hostage for 5 years. he's gonna catch 30 passes and two touchdowns. You remember
the Niners traded up to get Brandon Ayuk in 2020 because they thought the Packers were going to take him.
Yes.
How crazy of a moment was that? Like, you have Aaron Rodgers. I mean, we should end the podcast, but like the last point I'll make, just sliding doors moment. If Aaron Rodgers gets Brandon Ayuk to play with Devontae Adams, is Aaron Rodgers actually happy? And then the Packers take Brandon Ayuk instead of Jordan Love. And then, you know, does this whole era of Packers football happen that appears about to happen, right? Like that's anyway, sliding doors moment, kind of crazy. Nuts. And do the Niners beat the Packers like they have in the playoffs if Brandon Ayuk plays for the Packers and not the Niners?
I cranked the PFF sliders all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
I got Jerjon Newton to go number 3.
We're going to get text from Kyle at 3 a.m. talking about the sliders.
Here's how you can get Joe Alt not to the Titans by doing this. It's Amarius Mims. Kool-Aid 9 overall. Let me see if there's any other weird ass ones. AD Mitchell gone at number 15 to the Colts.
Dante Moncrief Redux.
Adisa Isaac, the other Penn State defensive end, goes 20th overall to the Steelers. That's the kind of pick that happens in the real draft, and everybody's like, wow, what a pick by the Steelers. Could never have seen this coming. What an organization. Something named Andrew Phillips. He's a cornerback from Kentucky, goes 22nd overall.
Yeah, he's my, like, I one of my strongest, like, the 49ers are taking this guy picks.
Okay. Yeah, he's a slot corner, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Here's who's available for the 49ers. Laiatu Latu, Dallas Turner, J.C. Latham, Jaden Daniels, Brian Thomas, JPJ, J.J. McCarthy.
It's just the who's who of, like, top 10 picks.
Yeah. I love this thing. I mess with the mock draft simulator so much.
You guys want to hear, I guess it's a sad way to end the pod, the most ridiculous mock draft story ever.
Please.
When I was very much before, I think it was before I'd even started writing for Chris. I used to do mock drafts, and I would take my 7th and 6th round picks and trade them for a 5th round pick. Then I'd take my 2 5th round picks and I'm trade them for a 4th round pick. Then I'd take everything in the 4th round and I'd end up with like 5 first round picks. And I'd have the coolest mock drafts ever. And I would just walk away thinking, like, dude, I am too good at this. I don't need to do these anymore. This is just like, here, check out my work. And
how are you not an NFL GM right now is the question.
I just haven't had my moment.
Rob started with 4 7th round picks and turned them into 17 first.
It's draft day.
Wheeling and dealing.
Good work,
Rob.
I thought it was cool.
That is cool. Love some mock drafts.
All right.
All I see in Kyle's glasses reflections are sliders just going back and forth.
It's going to be funny when, like, the Niners draft somebody that nobody has talked about at all.
Oh, dude, let me get back to my mock draft here. I'm going to pick the most random name that the 49ers are going to draft. Hang on.
Okay.
Let me get back here.
Is it Roger Rosengarten?
No. I think it's Adisa Isaac, I think, is a good name to know. Maybe Keon Coleman from Florida State is a good name to know.
We're talking in the first round.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Chris Jenkins from Michigan. I could see all that.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to go now, guys.
Okay. What if they went Junior Colson?
Wouldn't shock me. Edgerrin Cooper as well. Wouldn't shock me.
That would shock me. All right. So Rob had, who'd you have, Rob? You had
Johnny Newton.
Johnny Newton, Kyle, yeah, you had Ladd McConkey, and I had Jackson Powers Johnson.
No offensive tackles. Well. Me too. Good job, gang. Yeah,
because we're not sure if any of the offensive tackles who are going at 31 are tackles or guards.
You don't just beat out Colton McKivitz.
It's the deepest
or
class
John
ever,
Feliciano.
Though.
Or John
the Feliciano. The deepest class ever of tackles.
It is, so because they all play two or three positions.
Not, we're just not sure if they're tackles or guards.
You could get a starting tackle, a backup guard, and a third string center all in one player.
That's
it's team building, man. True. All right. That's it for us.
All right, peace.
Thank
everybody.
You. Big shout out to PFF and the Mock Draft Simulator. We love it. I appreciate you guys. Thank you everybody for listening. Stay tapped into Striking Gold, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Tap in there with Rob Lauder and of course Chris and myself on Candlestick Chronicles, wherever you get your podcasts, or on YouTube. Search Candlestick Chronicles, or it's youtube.com/Candlestick Chronicles podcast. We'll talk to you guys next time.
See ya. See ya.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.